Good morning. In Providence, I'm Elizabeth Harrison. Portsmouth police say a girl who went missing Wednesday but has since been found alive was the victim of an internet predator. More now from Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick.
Portsmouth police say 13-year-old Catherine Botello was found alive at 1 a.m. Thursday in an apartment in Haskell, New Jersey. The man who allegedly took her there, 27-year-old Daniel Berger, has been charged with transporting a minor with intent to engage in criminal sexual activity. Police say Botello went with Berger willingly, but that he should have known she was a minor just by looking at her. Portsmouth Interim Police Chief Jeffrey Furtado tried to allay the concerns of local residents.
To our citizens, I would like to say that they should rest assured knowing that our community is safe. They should know that this was not a random act or a child snatching. It appears that the victim and the suspect were known to each other and had some form of prior communication.
Furtado says the man and the girl met on the internet. The girl has been reunited with her family. Police would not comment on her physical or emotional state. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Next year's Democratic race for Secretary of State is heating up. The former head of a nonprofit housing advocacy group, Nellie Gorbea, has announced plans to run for the seat. Meanwhile, another candidate, Guillaume de Ramel, says he'll report a campaign balance of more than $300,000 after the most recent fundraising quarter. Former state Democratic chairman Edwin Pacheco is also running in the race for Secretary of State. In other campaign news, Cumberland Mayor Daniel McKee has filed papers to run for lieutenant governor next year. Secretary of State Ralph Mollis is also considering running for lieutenant governor. Term limits prevent incumbent Lieutenant Governor Elizabeth Roberts from seeking re-election. Court documents released yesterday show former Patriot Aaron Hernandez holding a gun just hours before and minutes after the shooting that has resulted in a murder charge. Hernandez has pleaded not guilty to the charge, and his attorney Charles Rankin continues to protest court delays while he's being held in custody.
He's now been in jail for 28 days without any chance for his lawyers to question a single witness, to examine any documents, to go forward with a hearing.
The new photos come from surveillance video taken in Hernandez's North Attleboro mansion and were part of a raft of documents released by the court in North Attleboro. Hernandez is accused of orchestrating the shooting of semi-pro football player Odin Lloyd after the two allegedly argued about who Lloyd was speaking to during an evening at a nightclub. Patriots quarterback Tom Brady addressed the Hernandez case yesterday as the team prepares to start training camp today. Brady said he was shocked when he heard about the charge against Hernandez.
And the relationship you have within the walls of this building are what they are, and then, you know, people have their own life. And, you know, I typically have great relationships with all my teammates.
Brady said the offseason has been difficult, but the team is hoping to move past the drama over Hernandez's arrest. And the annual Governor's Bay Day to be held this Sunday will include license-free saltwater fishing for residents and visitors. Catch limits will still need to be observed, and a license for freshwater fishing will be required. Parking will be free at all state beaches on Sunday. Also Sunday, the State Department of Environmental Management will host a variety of activities at Colt State Park in Bristol.
They call it the Great Friends Dance Festival, and Island Moving, under the direction of veteran Rhode Island dancer-choreographer Mickey Olson, has collected and collaborated with half a dozen or so companies and choreographers. If you go to Newport, and if you love dance, you should, you'll catch a terrific Houston, Texas company called Houston Metropolitan Dance. They might be giving you a piece with music by Philip Glass and Ravi Shankar, no less, or they might come up with excerpts from a dance called Air, where the surging performers move to songs like Beautiful Balloon and Catch a Falling Star. Houston Met is a company capable of speed, 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 and tautly drawn work, too. There's a lot of joy when they are on stage. Then again, you could catch Rhode Island-based dancer-choreographer Michael Bolger team up with musician Tom Rose and dancer Sarah Barney in Truth Be Told. As Rose drums away, plays a horn and other instruments, the movers are, well, they are sticking up the stage with what looks like painter's tape. Bolger and Barney carefully produce squares outlined in bright blue. They dance within them, and outside them, too. What's it all about, Alfie? Ha! You tell me. The dancers eventually do pull up all of the tape, leaving you both bemused and amused. And, of course, the host company performs. Olsen's Of Beauty and Light, done to Philip Glass, presents two wonderful dancers, Carol Tang and Jose Gonzalez. They move carefully, vibrantly, through a series of moments in what seem their relationship. This is one of those dances that allows you your own take on what is being seen on the floor. I saw A Life Together in all its wonderful and difficult times. Tang and Gonzalez gave that a complexion both slight and strong and deep. Each evening is filled with movements like this. Alas, there were too many at the performances I caught to speak of each one. All of this, all of the quick changes of theme, the new ideas, the old ones looked at again, takes place in one of Rhode Island's least known historical buildings, the Great Friends Quaker Meeting House, just off Broadway in Newport. Notice its wide floorboards, its open space for Quaker meetings. Built in 1699, the meeting house, thankfully air-conditioned this year, seems somehow welcoming toward the modern dance portrayed by the Great Friends. Incidentally, Island Moving's 4-year-old idea will bring the company other benefits besides this hot weather festival. Companies who have come to Newport will host IMC. In fact, Island Moving will dance in Denver in October, Houston next April, and Richmond in May. But for now, the heat is on in Newport. The Houston Met, IMC, along with companies and dancers from New York, Richmond, Virginia, and other places, will be in the meeting house this weekend. Great Friends is well worth a trip over the bridges.
Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome as our special guest the executive director of the Good Government Group Common Cause of Rhode Island, John Marion. Thanks for joining us, John.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
The State Board of Education is seeking an ethics exemption that would allow it to vote on making the board's chairwoman, Eva Marie Mancuso, interim commissioner of higher education. The exemption is needed since public officials are prohibited from accepting an appointment from a board of which they are a member. So, John, is it even a good idea for the education board to be seeking this exemption, in your view?
No. Justin Katz first pointed this out.
Justin Katz of the conservative blog Anchor Rising.
Yeah, and I think a guest of yours in the past pointed out that there's this revolving door prohibition preventing people on boards from getting jobs from those boards, and we sent a letter to the governor saying that absolutely we don't think this should be happening.
What about it, Maureen? Governor Chafee likes to describe himself as someone who's very ethically clean. Is he making a mistake by pursuing this exemption?
I think he is making a huge mistake, and it's either a question of sort of arrogance or incompetence. I mean, on a number of levels, this is an inappropriate thing. The governor is already backing. We haven't even heard from the Ethics Commission. The governor is walking this back. The pushback from legislative leaders suggests to me that irrespective of what the Ethics Commission does, and they indeed may prevent her from taking this job, this is not a good idea, and I suspect it's not going to go forward.
What do you say, Scott?
Well, I think obviously the governor's people, as we pointed out last week, did one of two things. Either they did not do their due diligence in looking at the background of Ms. Mancuso, or they did a bad PR move when they did not announce the need for an exemption when they appointed her. The other thing is, you know, she's a lawyer. And at some point, you'd think she would. She ran for attorney general. She's not a babe in the woods when it comes to Rhode Island politics. And you would think that even she would have known about this provision where you have to wait a year if you serve on a board before you take a state job.
The legislative session ended earlier this month, as usual, with late nights and a last-minute flurry of the passage of hundreds of bills. John, from where you stand as the head of a good government group, what were the highlights and lowlights? What most concerned you about this legislative session?
You know, Scott had a great commentary a couple of weeks ago where he talked about how why couldn't the rest of the legislation have been like the debate over same-sex marriage? It was thoughtful. It wasn't rushed at the end. The people's voices were heard. The representatives and senators' voices were heard, and that happened. And then it's like we went back into laps back off the wagon, and we went to the final days of the session where hundreds of bills were passed, late into the night. So we were disappointed that that model wasn't carried over to the end of the session, which we think it can be. You know, we're not Pollyanna. We don't think it can be perfect, but we certainly think it can be a lot better.
Scott, I've heard Sean speak in support of a stronger deadline for filing bills to preclude this kind of last-minute rush of new legislation. Do you see that as having any chance of coming to fruition?
It's very, very difficult because you have to make so many last-minute deals. They're not pretty. We know that one person's pork is another person's tenderloin sometimes at the State House, and your great compromise is someone else's backroom deal. But that said, you would think, given all the hearings they have on the budget, and given the fact that the House Finance Committee in particular has looked at this for months and months, you would think that shortly after the May revenue estimates come in, that there could be some movement and also better planning. I mean, it seems to me like these last-minute things, the Secunet Bridge tolls are a good example. They knew from January that this was going to have to be financed somehow. They knew about the 38 Studios bond since January. That was either going to have to be in the budget or out of the budget. And they didn't do really anything about it until the last week or so. And then we have these last-minute deals for the liquor industry to knock off the sales tax. And it seems like these things are done really ad hoc and without a whole lot of contemplation.
Ad hoc, oh my. Maureen, what kind of measures would you suggest to improve the legislative process in Rhode Island?
Well, I would suggest that, for example, I agree with Scott. So much of this is tied up with the budget and the deals. They've got to get people to vote for the budget, so they've got to save some of this to trade off. But in terms of, for example, the master lever, which John had worked on so hard, that's something that I think you have to put pressure on to come out early. I mean, it's almost like there can be a set of bills that you could force debate on, I think, earlier on, that don't have to wind up in this last-minute dealing. Secunet Bridge was one of them. But I think some of these measures, you know, when you get to the end of the session, the whole idea about the master lever has to put pressure and focus on
it
early.
To push back a little bit, Maureen, though, Ken Block, people can debate the master lever and its significance, but Ken Block did really focus a lot of attention on that, got a lot of people out to committee hearings on that, and the legislative leadership obviously didn't want that to go anywhere this year.
Well, I mean, I think you have to keep trying, and you have to develop a strategy where there's enough heat and enough visibility early on. I mean, that's the only way it's going to pass. I mean, it's not a popular thing, so you've got to shine light on it when people aren't distracted about the other things.
Let's talk about a related piece of ethics. The State Ethics Commission ability to police legislative behavior was neutered by a state Supreme Court decision in 2009. Since then, the General Assembly hasn't shown any real appetite to restore the Ethics Commission's oversight over lawmakers. John, is there any hope for ameliorating this situation, or is it likely just to persist like this?
You know, actually, I think there's a lot of hope, and I look toward history. If you look at the two greatest successes probably in the last two decades of Common Cause, one was exactly 10 years ago next year, separation of powers, and then 10 years prior to that, which was the downsizing of the legislature and the merit selection system of judges. And what do those things have in common? Those were the years that the Constitutional Convention question was on the ballot. So there was this fear that if we don't make some fundamental change to the Constitution, and that's what's needed in ethics here, we're going to have to face this open convention that could do lots of things to change legislative power. And so that's why I think 2014 is a key year. We'll, just like Maureen said, we'll put a lot of pressure, as much pressure as we think we can bring to bear on this issue as quickly as we can next year, and try to get it aside.
Maureen, as we know, the Ethics Commission was created by the voters during a 1986 constitutional convention. Is that an argument for lawmakers to restore the Ethics Commission's oversight over the General Assembly?
Well, I mean, we have the strongest Ethics Commission in the country. This exemption was carved out by virtue of a Supreme Court decision. And my argument would be, or my perspective would be, the only way you're going to get legislators to limit their speech and debate authority, basically is what it is through a constitutional convention. In other words, if you can push to have that, that would be the arena whereby you can make these really fundamental changes. Because otherwise, I don't see it happening. I don't see them giving in.
How do you see the outlook, Scott?
I think there's no change on Smith Hill without an aroused public. And I think the gay marriage paradigm is really interesting to look at here. Without this real campaign that was put on by the marriage equality folks, that wouldn't have happened early in this session. And I think as long as you have an apathetic public and a lack of real two-party competition at the state house, if you don't have an aroused public, voters who are upset and want change, if Rhode Islanders are just going to call the talk shows and kvetch about this privately, no change is going to happen because, look, people don't give up power without being pushed to give it up.
We're a little short on time, but John Marion of Common Cause, I'd like you to weigh in on this. A moderate party gubernatorial candidate, Ken Block, recently called out Gina Raimondo for having a political operative as her chief of staff, Andrew Roos. This is seen as something leading to next year's gubernatorial race, and Raimondo is obviously not alone among office holders in having political operatives in her administration. What do you make of that?
You know, when the issue came up with the majority leader of the Senate hiring Stephen Iannuzzi, that Ed Acorn kind of made infamous.
The son of a major labor union in Providence.
Yeah, without a college degree and all that. You know, we didn't make a big deal because really, in the end, people, particularly in executive situations, have to be allowed to hire their senior staff. And I don't see how, from a practical point of view, you could sort of put some limits on who you can hire as your executive senior staff. You know, this is Ken trying to make some hay in a political season.
All right, we're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott?
Thank you.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And the head of Common Cause of Rhode Island, John Marion.
Thank you so much.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.